Hey there, and welcome to this week's episode of Lost Origins, your number one radio show for all things ancient mysteries, alternative historical theories, and lost civilizations. Make sure to check us out on the web at lost-origins.com, and you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. This week's episode of Lost Origins is brought to you by Bear Hush Boutique. Bear Hush is an online women's boutique that features high-end fashion at a price that is not going to break the bank. They specialize in classy attire, fit for any season, and you can definitely check them out online at bearhush.com, BEARHUSH.com. This week's episode is also brought to you by Inner Traditions and Baron Company. Inner Traditions has been publishing books on esoteric philosophy, New Age spirituality, and alternative health for well over 40 years. Visit innertraditions.com to learn more about their books and their authors, and you can also sign up for coupons, catalogs, and special offers. Inner Traditions and Baron Company, they offer a massive, massive catalogs. Their books are authored by some of the top researchers in the field, and we have absolutely enjoyed working with them here at Lost Origins. So we recommend picking up any one of their titles, but more specifically, check out Secrets of Ancient America by Carl Lerberger, which is the topic for today's show. Carl has studied archaeological and sacred sites in North America, more specifically with a focus on ancient Old World's people in America well before Columbus, and he's been doing so for well over 25 years. This is what led him to pen Secrets of Ancient America, and today, Carl will be joining us to discuss his book, his research surrounding pre-Columbian Old World contact in the New World, and the importance of archaeoastronomy in the ancient world. All that and more coming up right after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, and we are back. Today, we have the absolute privilege of chatting with Carl Lerberger, and I gotta say, I have been looking forward to today's episode for about 2 months now. It's been kind of a long time coming and getting everything ironed out in terms of schedules. Carl is an entrepreneur, a renewable energy expert, petroglyph and archaeoastronomy researcher, and author of Secrets of Ancient America. Carl has studied archaeological and sacred sites in North America for more than 25 years and is a supporter of the diffusionist belief, meaning his research is indicative of Old World contact in the New World before the era of Columbus. His latest book, Secrets of Ancient America, details his years of fieldwork and the evidence that he has compiled pointing to the Phoenicians, Celts, and many others having journeyed into the Americas centuries before the voyages of Columbus. And Secrets of Ancient America is actually Lost Origins' February read of the month. So, Carl, first of all, congratulations on that. And secondly, thank you for joining us on today's show.
Well, Andrew, greetings to you, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Anytime. It's a pleasure. We read the book here. We provided it a review, an honest and objective review, providing it with 5 stars. I loved it. I couldn't put the thing down. I thought that it was very well written. It definitely tells a story, which is a nice break from just the regurgitation of data or historical theory. So I have to commend you on the way that you put this thing together. It was very well done, and that's why we awarded it the February Read of the Month. So.
Well, thank you so much for that and for those generous introductory remarks. I'm really looking forward to this interview.
Yeah, likewise. So I have a laundry list of topics that I want to discuss with you today. And before we dig into the book, I think it might be good for you to kind of give us some background on who you are, what your research entails, how you got into researching petroglyph sites, archaeoastronomy all across America.
Well, as you said in the introduction, I'm a renewable energy entrepreneur, and that's the passion that I brought to life. But, you know, we got to get our jollies in the world, and it's all not about work. So right. I have been an explorer, a traveler for most of my life. But things dramatically changed in 1986 after I read author Barry Fell's book, America BC. Mm-hmm. And this really, not only for myself, changed a lot of people's thinking, because Dr. Fell, who was a professor of biology or microbiology affiliated with Harvard, was a biologist turned epigrapher. An epigrapher is someone who reads ancient languages. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fell's thesis was that Columbus was last, that the Phoenicians, the Celts, many other ancient cultures, including the Romans and the Hebrews, had made it to the Americas long before Columbus. And he provided an astonishing list of sites, of artifacts, of stories. Wow, this was almost, you know, too much to believe.
Sure.
And living in New England, where the heart of the story of the Celts took place, gave me an incredible opportunity to begin to test the thesis that Dr. Fell had put forward.
Sure.
And it was really the basis of America BC that got me excited about this. I started doing field research in New England that led me to meet my two mentors, Bill McGlone and Phil Leonard, who were doing research in Colorado. I moved out to Colorado, and you know, after I got settled, my very first trip was to go down to La Junta, Colorado, in southeastern Colorado, to meet Bill McGlone, who was a retired engineer. Mm-hmm. And it was really under Bill's tutelage, along with other colleagues that he had, including other epigraphers like Philip Leonard and researchers, as well as ranchers who knew where these sites were, spending years getting the hang of the area and getting an understanding of reading rock art or petroglyphs, that gave me the insights and the motivation to do the extensive field work over the last 20 years or so.
Right.
And the heart of the data is something you touched upon in your introduction, which is the disagreement between the so-called diffusionists and the independent the isolationists. Mm-hmm. And most of modern day archaeology and anthropology has gravitated toward the isolationist view of history and cultural expansion. And the isolationists believe that culture grows up in an independent setting.
Right.
So that, as an example, the Native Americans developed their culture in an isolated fashion without that much influence from the outside. Contrary to this are the diffusionists, who believe that cultural interaction comes through diffusion or through the outside world. And this has been a debate that has gone on for hundreds of years, but really the Smithsonian Institute and the researchers and the directors of the Smithsonian really sealed the debate over 100 years ago by really emphasizing the independent view of development and reinforcing the isolationist position. Mm-hmm. So that when Dr. Fell published his book demonstrating the influences that came to America before Columbus, he was viciously attacked and vilified. And to this day, the mention of Barry Fell in the context of anthropologists or archaeologists is almost the kiss of death of credibility.
Right.
And so this has been the challenge for diffusionists on how to break through the isolationist position that dominates all of the universities, all the major publications, including, National Geographic, the Smithsonian, And this has been the challenge for any diffusionist researcher. And one great example is Gunnar Thompson, a PhD expert in symbols of Asia in America. Mm-hmm. And he has never been able to get tenure. In fact, when he was writing his thesis, they wouldn't publish it. And it's been symbolic of the treatment and disrespect that diffusionist scholars receive. So to wrap up this introduction, the debate between the isolationists and the diffusionists continues in spite of the evidence that the diffusionist scholars, such as Barry Fell and Gunnar Thompson, mm-hmm. And George Carver, and really scores of researchers have provided evidence to the contrary of the isolationist perspective. And it's really the accumulation of this evidence that has been published by so many other authors and researchers, in addition to my own experiences with these researchers and discoveries that I've made in the field, emboldened me to write Secrets of Ancient America to challenge the old history that somehow still promotes the concept of Columbus discovering America.
Right. It seems so ridiculous to me that the diffusionist view is just so wildly contested by mainstream science. I mean, we know that transoceanic travel is possible, even on a primitive level, right? If you look at what Dr. Tor Heyerdahl did with the Kon-Tiki expedition, for example, in 1947, and for listeners not familiar with that, Heyerdahl, he built a raft from balsa wood, which he named the Kon-Tiki, and then he sails across the Pacific Ocean in a very primitive voyage. It's just insane that there's so much evidence pointing to old world contact in the new world, but it's just so rigorously ignored and discredited and thrown out. Why do you think this is? I mean, why is there such apprehension to admit that it's possible that there's an alternative here?
Well, you asked the question starting with Thor Heyerdahl, and that's a great jumping off point, understand, answer to your question. Thor Heyerdahl was probably the most famous diffusionist researcher scholar of the 20th century. And his books on Tiki and his voyages across the ocean just is the stuff that National Geographic loved, and everybody knows his name. But it was Thor Heyerdahl who wrote the book No Borders. And this was a book that never got published out of Norwegian that it was written in. And in this book, Heyerdahl, along with his collaborator, Carl Lindstrom, documents the colonies in Greater Vinland. That is the area of the Great Lakes, Canada, and New York State, that were colonies that were growing wine, and they were taxed by the Vatican. And it's through the Vatican research that Heyerdahl and Lindstrom were able to uncover the tax records of these colonies in the New World in the 1300s and 1400s, so long before Columbus. Now, why this evidence has not come to light to the mainstream is really the heart of the question you're asking. And many people have different notions, but the most important thing to realize is that for the diffusionist position to prevail, we would have to see a lot of apologies and recognition on the part of the archaeopriest or the priesthood that really protects the isolationist position. And it's just unlikely that we see these old historians willing to say, hey, we got it wrong.
Right. I mean, there were master's degrees handed out based on those theories, and now all of a sudden, those are worth what, right?
But there's another important point, and that is that the whole Columbus myth really defends the idea that manifest destiny, and to a large extent justifies the institution of slavery, genocide, and the stealing of native lands. And this is, of course, a very painful chapter in our history, and of course, a dramatic change in the history of the Native Americans in the New World. And we the white culture, have yet to come to terms with the destruction that was ravaged on the Americas by the church and by the conquistadors of the monarchies. And until we are, and you know, the greatest thing we can say about a change in attitude is the current pope. You know, the present pope has gone and publicly apologized to the indigenous cultures of the New World. Mm-hmm. And that is something that has been a long time coming.
Sure.
The previous pope, you know, took the opposite perspective, that the conquest was a good thing, and that through the purging of the native peoples, you know, they became better and enlightened. Well, you know, that really reinforced the spin of the role of the church in the destruction of native cultures in America. So now we can actually see a glimpse of one of these institutions of the archaeopriesthood making some, albeit small, concessions for the destruction of the indigenous cultures of the America and the resulting destruction of many Native American tribes that don't even exist anymore.
Right, and that's one of the first chapters in your book. It was definitely well done because it grips you right away. You paint this picture of this dark alternative history of Columbus, and you do like a side-by-side comparison, which I loved. Like here's the traditionally accepted story of Columbus, right, that we're taught in school, and then here's actually what happened that we're not really told about. I would love if you could, for our listeners, kind of walk them through that comparison, right?
Well, I did start the book with the Columbus myth, and it really resonates throughout the book that we've been lied to about our history, mm-hmm. that serious claims of old world contact have been ignored by the archaeological community, and the historical record has been changed and actually expunged. And we can see this in the story of Columbus, because, you know, we're told that Columbus didn't actually know where he was going. He was going to get, you know, to China or to Asia and meet Genghis Khan or go to India to get spices. Well, it just all proves to be a big lie, that actually Columbus knew exactly where he was going. He knew how long it would take to get there. And he wasn't after spices, he was after gold. So, you know, this is the alternative story, that Columbus just did not go off into the ocean, that it might be, the world might be flat, and he was taking the big risk. It was from Arab maps and Viking maps that Columbus had access to, mm-hmm. both through the Arab maps, through the libraries that were abandoned in Toledo, Spain, by the Arabs, mm-hmm. and the Viking maps through his wife, Philippa, who was married into the very famous Drummond Sinclair family of the Henry Sinclair lineage, who was Prince of Orkney Islands, and who reportedly traveled to the Americas in the 1390s. So Columbus, in addition to having maps and histories, he knew where he was going, and he brought enough food to get there. He wasn't bringing gold or silver to bring to Genghis Khan. No, he was bringing little trinkets that he would be able to give to the natives. So he knew about the trade currents from his previous explorations of Africa. And that we get the whole story of Columbus, that it was about the gold, and it was about the subjugation of the natives and the onslaught of Christianity in the New World.
Right.
So what we have disguised in the Columbus myth is that Columbus was the first to establish slavery in the Americas, and that it instigated the genocide of the Native Americans as long as with the confiscation of their land. So it's much easier and less controversial to keep Columbus Day going, that Columbus was the great adventurer and the great explorer. And this is kind of the tone which we get off to a white Christian view of America. Mm-hmm. But with the new history that is now available to people, with the reemergence of Native American culture, finally, we're beginning to see a change in the dynamics, and hopefully this is going to play into the change from an isolationist view that reinforces Columbus discovered America to a new history view that Columbus was perhaps the last explorer, and that many, many, many different groups, including the Celts and the Phoenicians from the Atlantic side, as well as Indo-Turkish and greater Indus Valley cultures from the Pacific side, made it to the Americas.
Right. And so the new story of Columbus that has been coming to light recently, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of that is actually from his own words, right? Like this is being extracted from his journals and the logs of these journeys. Is that correct?
I went back and looked at some of these logs, and I couldn't walk away with the idea that Columbus was writing all this stuff. It really looked to me like much had been censured and rewritten by the church.
Sure.
The story of Columbus is being pieced together and presented in different forms, but I have not seen what I consider to be a serious challenge to the mythology of Columbus outside of the diffusionist scholars,
right,
that are really pushing a new history of agenda, that we've got to overturn the old history ideology and the propaganda and take a fresh look at history without having these ideological blinders on. Mm-hmm. And I think, Americans and listeners to this show can appreciate when I talk about blinders, when we talk about the politics of today, that everyone is just so ideologically charged that really the truth or the best policies get left behind. And we kind of see this ideologically charged attitude whenever we talk about diffusionism, and we see this especially at the universities. And fast forward to the end of the story, it's waiting for a new generation of epigraphers, of archaeologists, of anthropologists that really don't have these ideological blinders, that are willing to go to some of these new history sites that prove the Celts were there, that are indicative that other cultures traveled to the Americas, without the fear of getting lost in a career by the archaeopriests that really provide no incentives to study diffusionist history or diffusionist sites. So at the end of the day, this paradigm shift that we hope is taking place, albeit slowly, is going to create a learning environment so that as in the future people go to high school and college and even in middle schools, that we're not fed the story of Columbus discovered America and that we live in a white culture, but instead that many, many different sailors and cultures made it to the Americas before Columbus, and that we have a very diverse culture. And this is really, again, diversity versus singularity, diffusionism versus isolationism.
Right. So this is the second time or third time within our conversation this morning that you've mentioned the archaeopriests or the archaeopriesthood. And this is another way that you open the book, and I found it fascinating that you created this protagonist to walk us through this story. Again, for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with your work or have not read your book yet, can you give us a little bit more on the archaeopriesthood, who they are, why you labeled them as such, and then the role that they played in your research and throughout your book?
Well, I did need to find a antagonist. Mm-hmm. And it came to me as I was reading the story of Galileo and Bruno. Bruno was a contemporary of Galileo's. And after Copernicus died, his theory was that the Earth traveled around the sun, contrary to the view of the day that the sun traveled around the Earth. Well, it was Galileo that proved that wasn't true, and it was Bruno who supported him. And everybody knows that Galileo, you know, was condemned by the church, and he ended up going to jail, and he had to say that what he wrote wasn't true, on and on. But when I found out about what happened to his colleague Bruno and how he was burned at the stake in the most hideous way, and even after he recounted the truth, that I realized that kind of victimization and venom, believe it or not, continues to this day, right, in the debate. And although diffusionists like Barry Fell may not have been literally crucified, intellectually, he definitely was.
Sure.
So that the archaeopriests are really the defenders of the old history. And it's a convergence of different interests, including the archaeological community that wants to defend their earlier writings and theses, and they want to they have an agenda that promotes the idea that many of these old world sites are all Native American, and that it's the Native Americans that are being hurt by the diffusionist position.
Sure.
And so it's the archaeologists combined with the priests of the church that want to spin the conquering of the Americas as a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's the archaeopriesthood are really the gatekeepers in the educational institutions that keep diffusionist thinking, such as Gunnar Thompson and Barry Fell, and anthropologists, archaeologists, linguists, these researchers that develop not only theories, but evidence indicating a very robust cultural interactions that is still holding back this information that has become the archaeopriesthood.
Sure.
And I can only share, in summary, the difficulty that my colleagues have had in getting reasonable debates, rational thinkers, archaeologists willing to visit these sites and to look at the evidence. And it's just such a closed community that I had to come up with something that began to give the reader an idea of what we're dealing with.
Sure.
Here. And going from Bruno to being burned at the stake for stating and proving that the Earth went around the sun, all the way up to the story of Planet of the Apes, where in a contemporary series of movies, mm-hmm, we are shown exactly what's going on today with the diffusionist and the independent isolationist. In the Planet of the Apes, as everyone recalls, it was the apes who thought that they had invented their own culture.
Right.
But at the end of the very first movie with Charlton Heston, the head of the ape scientific community burns the evidence
right.
that the ape culture had come from human culture. And to a greater or a lesser extent, we have had this kind of destruction of the evidence, and if not blatant destruction, certainly ignoring of the evidence by the archaeopriesthood.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned that we run the risk of hurting the Native Americans by stripping them of these sites having been built by them. But one thing that you did very, very tactfully in your book was present that you're not discrediting the ingenuity and the abilities of the Native Americans, and that in fact 99.99999% of the petroglyph sites in America today were constructed by the natives, and it's just a small handful of sites that we see strewn across America that lend themselves to being evidence of old world contact in the new world. And we only have so much time today, and for our listeners, just so you know, we have scheduled a follow-up to this interview with Carl, so we are going to bring him back on the show. There are so many different sites that we need to discuss, and to blast through them quickly would not do them justice, so we agreed to do that. The one site that I do want to talk about, though, would be America's Stonehenge, which you do reference in the book. And I think this would be a perfect opportunity for you to, A, explain the site to our listeners, but also explain its importance with respect to the diffusionist view as to old world contact being present in the new world pre-Columbus.
Okay, that's great, but I would like to go back before we talk about America's Stonehenge and the Celtic cultures and the cultural explorers in America. I want to go back to the Native Americans because this is so important.
Sure, sure.
And unfortunately, there are some Native Americans and some tribes that really take umbrage and feel insulted by proponents of the new history with the idea that a diffusionist view is a whitewash of Native culture. Mm-hmm. And in the case of one particular site that we'll discuss in our next interview, known as Mojave North in California, that is indicative of Trans-Pacific contact. It's been the Native American at that site that has claimed that these petroglyphs were created by their ancestors, and we get into a really big pushing match, and the archaeopriesthood is supporting the Native Americans. So that's not the case with all tribes. There are specific tribes, including Cherokee tribes, that do understand that in the case of their tribes that they had cultural diffusion from Hebrews, and the Hebrew language is spotted in their language, some of the customs. So we can't speak about the universal Native Americans, or this is how Native Americans think, or this Native Americans were impacted by the Celts. We cannot do any of that. We have to look at each individual tribe in each individual area.
Sure.
But in addition, you know, with the Native Americans, it's the book talks about the wisdom of the Native Americans and how that this wisdom is incorporated and embodied in the petroglyphs. So this is a big part of the story. And at the end of the book, you know, the realization that I try to give the reader is that all of us have to be prepared for a new history,
sure.
Including the Native Americans, including the archaeopriesthood, including anyone who's been through high school, the people at the Smithsonian and National Geographic. That's what the new history of America is all about. And Native Americans are an essential part of that. And you know, you make the great point that nearly all petroglyphs, I'd go a step further, ancient sacred sites in America are really Native American or from the ancestors of the Native Americans. It's a handful or several score of specific sites that demonstrate, that prove beyond any doubt to a rational investigator, hey, this isn't Native Americans.
Right.
This is a foreign culture. And one such site is America's Stonehenge in southern New Hampshire. And I mentioned that there were many migrations, including the Phoenicians, Mediterranean groups, and the Celts that came across the Atlantic. Well, Erica Stonehenge is evidence of the connection with Celtic Mediterraneans and the New World. And we can surmise that the Celts' interest in the New World really began with the copper mining. And it was very rich copper deposits in the Great Lake region that motivated many cultures to come to the Americas, including the Celts.
Right.
But the Celts did make it to New England. We have evidence of many of their structures. We have evidence of their writing, which is a Celtic language called Oong. And in right outside of Salem, New Hampshire, is probably the best evidence of a Celtic community at America's Stonehenge. And we can surmise that for perhaps several hundreds of years, that this was the center of the Celtic culture that expanded throughout New England, which in those days was really kind of a new Ireland, so to speak.
Right.
And this is taking place, around 2,000 years ago, perhaps earlier. But it was, with this stronghold in New England that the Celts had settled that area. They were involved in agriculture, and you can find, especially in southern Vermont, and throughout areas of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and New York, you can find evidence of stone chambers oriented toward the east in most cases, and in rare occasions with Celtic writing on them, that demonstrates that the Celts were here.
Right.
And the beautiful thing is that even though this site was almost destroyed many times, in fact, the curb cuts of nearby Lowell, Massachusetts, were quarried from these ancient structures at America's Stonehenge. But it was, wow. It was a phenomenal effort to preserve the site, which I should say what was left of it. And today, anybody can drive to America's Stonehenge, pay the very modest entrance fee, walk the site, learn about the archaeoastronomy of the site, visit the chambers, and it's just the beginning of the Celtic migration that I've been involved in tracking, that has following the rivers into the part of the world of Colorado, Oklahoma, and Kansas.
Right.
And here's where we have perhaps the best evidence of the Celtic expansion, where they have left petroglyphs, including writing in a Celtic language, very sophisticated archaeoastronomy involving paying homage to Celtic gods and goddesses. And these sites in Colorado, Oklahoma, in Kansas are largely preserved because the area is so remote. And thank goodness for those ranchers that are so protective of right. their property, they've been able to, in many instances, keep the vandals out. So the Celts did make it into the Colorado and Oklahoma, and left very sophisticated writing and what we would call temples and archaeoastronomy sites that are world class, in the sense that everybody knows about Stonehenge as a archaeoastronomy site or a calendrical site, and most people know about Chichen Itza, the pyramid of the Mayans, that
sure.
on the equinoxes we see this great alignment that takes place. Well, these very large monumental alignments are replicated on a very small petroglyphic scale in the Americas, and there are dozens of them that were created by old world people, as opposed to the many hundreds of them that were created by Native Americans. But these alignments, these archaeoastronomy petroglyphic stories, if you will, to me prove beyond any doubt that not only were the Celts here starting in New England, but traveled extensively through the Americas, leaving their mark. And what's so phenomenal about this story is that the marks that they left, the homage, the prayers and the rituals and the homages to their gods and goddesses are the best examples of some of these Celtic religions in the world. And that you cannot go to Europe, and you cannot go to Ireland, and you cannot go to England or where the Celts were based, and find this level of heritage and culture from these Celtic people.
Right.
And the reason is because the Romans and the church and whoever, you know, was fighting the Celts destroyed their culture. So much of it has been destroyed in Europe, and we have remnants here in the Americas that tell some of these incredible stories about the ancient cults, for example, of Mithras, a sun god that predated Christianity, as well as some of the Celtic goddesses. So this is I focused five chapters on the Celts in my book because, to me, the Celts represent the smoking gun of the new history of America. That is, that the old world Celtic travelers left their mark in stone in a sufficient number of sites that proves beyond any doubt that they were here. And this is in addition to, you know, evidence such as coins and parts of swords and other not so 100% evidence, but the archaeoastronomy and the petroglyphs and the writing left by the Celts in Colorado is complemented by the other artifacts that have been found and the other research undertaken by other authors. So the Celts is really the jumping-off point to proving the new history, but it's also a jumping-off point to understand how these ancient cultures traveled, made it to the Americas, beginning to help us understand what happened to them, and beginning to understand that it wasn't just the Celts per se, but these were multicultural crews that came, so that you would find different cultures, members of the crew that spoke different languages. And this is consistent with what we find in the rock art. For example, in Colorado, not only are we finding Celtic writing, but we're finding Libyan writing. So it's not just a singular Celt or, you know, a singular Phoenician group that came over here, but these were diverse multicultural crews that bought a multicultural history over. And maybe that's a great way to kind of end this segment, that Gunnar Thompson in his book, you know, America Discovery, really emphasizes that our history and culture is very diverse and it's multicultural. And that's, I think, one of the most important aspects of learning the new history and of celebrating the new history. Mm-hmm. And we can suggest that when Columbus Day becomes a national holiday celebrating the indigenous cultures and the indigenous peoples of the world, that we have reached a point where the new history is in place.
Right.
When we open the National Geographic magazine and see a story about Celtic travelers in the Arkansas river system in Colorado, or evidence of Phoenician miners in or evidence of Indus Valley symbols in the American Southwest, then you'll know that the paradigm has shifted, that a new history of America is possible. But until then, it's an uphill battle to break through the archaeopriesthood and to get a objective view of the evidence that we can then present not only to the academics of the world, the historians and the archaeologists, but to the people who read National Geographic, the students who are learning American history in junior high school and high school. And, of course, the museums and alike. So
right.
It's a wonderful topic, but I want to give people the truth that it's still an uphill battle, and seeing our history without blinders takes a new way of seeing.
Well said. Well said, Carl. So I agree. I think that's probably a good point to kind of wrap up today's conversation. Before we end today's segment, though, I would like for you to be able to provide our listeners with any additional resources outside of your book that you do offer for anybody wanting to learn more about your work, your book, your journeys before we bring you back in for another show. So somebody interested in learning more about the work of Carl Lerberger, I mean, do we have a website? How do we find out more about you?
It's the New History of America. That's www.newhistoryofamerica.com. And at newhistoryofamerica.com, listeners can purchase a book or they can contact me and get an autograph book. Also be able to learn about some of my enterprises in the renewable energy area. And for those listeners that are interested in my renewable energy enterprises, they can visit www.purevisiontechnology.com.
Very good.
And Andrew, I want to thank you for a lively interview, and I do look forward to coming back and getting into a lot more stories relating to some of these groups that did make it to America, including the Phoenicians and people from Greater India, as well as Romans, Chinese travelers, and Hebrews.
No, the pleasure is all ours, Carl. I cannot wait for our next conversation. I know our listeners will be very excited as well. So thank you so much for joining us today, Carl. It was a pleasure having you on Lost Origins. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up this week's episode of Lost Origins. Make sure that you subscribe, whether you're on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, what have you. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode, you never miss an article, and you're always on top of the latest alternative historical theories and all things ancient mysteries and lost civilizations. Also, make sure that you check back for next week's episode, where we have the privilege of sitting down and interviewing author and researcher Andrew Collins, more specifically focusing on his recent book, Göbekli Tepe, Genesis of the Gods. So I'm your host, Andrew, and that concludes this week's episode of Lost Origins. We'll see you soon, and keep questioning everything.